Hey there, and welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're exploring something really close to home for pretty much everyone. It shapes almost every interaction you have now.
Yeah,
how technology has just fundamentally changed the way we connect, or try to connect. Our mission for this Deep Dive is, well, to unpack the insights from the sources you shared with us. It's a real mix, lecture notes, research, some interesting examples. And we really want to understand the surprising ways things like nonverbal communication, our online identities, even time. How time itself gets completely reshaped when we talk online. Okay, let's dive in. And maybe the best place to start is with this idea of tech trying to be, well, trying to be human.
Yeah, that leads us right into chatterbots. Think of them as computer programs, but they're built specifically to interact in a way that feels human. Their whole purpose is to mimic conversation, respond like a person might.
Right, and the material you provided mentioned a few examples, names like Mitsuku, Rose, Poncho. They might ring a bell for some listeners, but there's a really interesting note about Kuki, an AI. What stood out was that Kuki doesn't just, you know, follow a script.
Exactly.
She actually learns through interaction. It said the more she talks to people, the, quote, smarter she becomes, sort of evolving her chat skills from experience.
Mm. And that whole attempt, trying to mimic human interaction digitally, it brings up a really core concept from the sources, social presence theory. This theory is all about how well a communication medium, whatever it is, can convey those social cues you need. You know, the things that make you feel like there's a real person or real social contact on the other side. Way back in 76, Short and his colleagues argued something pretty fundamental. They said that perceiving others as truly real and present is, well, crucial. You need that for meaningful relationships, for any real sense of intimacy. It's about feeling someone is really there.
Okay, so what happens then when we take that online? Where, you know, a lot of those traditional presence cues are just gone. The sources suggest something kind of fascinating happens. While we definitely can build strong relationships online, absolutely, there seems to be this tendency, maybe especially at the start, to idealize the other person a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we fill in the blanks left by the lack of cues with our own hopes or projections. Maybe we build up these stronger expectations than we would face-to-face.
Yeah, the imagination gets more room.
Exactly. The digital space gives our imagination a little more room to run, maybe.
And this isn't just a small thing. It's part of a much bigger shift, what the sources call the technological transformation of interaction. They really highlight how dramatically we've woven information and communication technology, ICT, into like the very fabric of our relationships now.
Yeah, we use social networks. We text, we tweet.
Right. These aren't just tools anymore. They're the actual channels we use to deliver big news, good and bad, share updates, start relationships.
Even end them sometimes.
Yeah, even end them and carry all sorts of messages between people.
Which naturally raises a really critical question that the material explores. With this huge reliance on ICT, are we actually using it effectively? You know, to genuinely connect? Or are we, maybe without even realizing it, sometimes abusing its potential?
Mm-hmm.
Or just bumping up against its limitations?
And this is where that famous idea from McLuhan, the medium is the message, really hits home, as the sources point out. It's not just what you say. The actual medium you choose, text, email, video, profoundly changes the communication itself.
How so?
Well, the sources explain that the platform itself alters what you can send, how it gets perceived by the other person, even how the content is sort of handled or processed. A text just feels different from an email, right? Which feels different, again, from a video call, even if the basic information is the same.
That makes sense. Thinking about how the medium shapes the message, let's talk about how it lets us shape ourselves, our online persona. Have you ever really stopped to think about how the you that exists online compares to, you know, the person you are when you meet someone face-to-face?
It's a really key point from the sources. Online, the possibilities for identity just done. They multiply. You're not stuck with just one representation.
Wow.
You can have different email addresses, different usernames for different sites or communities, different screen names. Each one could potentially show a different side of you or, yeah, even present a totally different identity if you wanted.
And here's something the sources underline that's, well, pretty striking. In many online spaces where you don't have that physical presence, you can actually become genderless, raceless, rankless, even appearanceless. Marcus and his colleagues noted this back in 2007.
Yeah, all those visual and auditory cues we rely on constantly, almost unconsciously, in person to sort of categorize ourselves and others, they can just vanish online.
Wow. So if we're operating in this often disembodied space, how do we put that context back? How do we signal who we are?
The sources point straight to the creation of avatars. These digital figures, they become the embodiment of our online identity. They're a way to provide some of those missing clues to signal something about who we are, or maybe who we want to seem like.
But even with avatars, that initial lack of physical cues, how someone looks, how they sound, that still impacts how we understand things like group affiliations, right?
Definitely.
Those quick signals that help us find common grounds or figure out the social dynamics in person, they aren't always there online, or they're different.
Exactly. And the richness of the medium really matters here. As the source has highlighted, when you start adding things like video, images, voice, that dramatically increases the potential for building real relational and social connections online.
So platforms like Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, they become more than just places to dump content.
Right. They become communities where we share these extra layers of social information, going beyond just the text itself.
Okay, let's zoom in on something we use constantly, email and texting. Even though they're mostly text, the sources say they're surprisingly packed with nonverbal dimensions. Like, think about your email address. It's a personal thing. It helps distinguish you. Did you pick it carefully?
Yeah, does it feel playful, professional?
A bit weird.
Exactly. The sources mention that using your actual name tends to build more trust than, say, an abstract handle. They even referenced Facebook requiring real names as kind of reflecting that idea.
And it's not just the address. The actual formatting of your message carries so much weight. The sources really stress this, how you choose your words, how you use what they call nonverbal effectors, those little cues that tweak the meaning, just the overall look of the email. All that influences how someone reads it and how they react.
They gave specific examples too, right? Like writing in bold.
Yep.
Using all CCAPS, which, let's be honest, still feels like shouting to most people.
Oh, absolutely.
Your font choice, how you use punctuation ending with a period versus an exclamation point, makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Even just the length. A really short, abrupt email feels totally different from a long, thoughtful one, even if the main point is the same. These are basically our digital nonverbals.
Yeah, they really are.
And what's particularly stressed in the material is that precisely because those other cues are missing, the use of language in writing, like in an email, it actually becomes more critical than it might be face-to-face. Your writing quality essentially is your presentation in that moment.
So making a good impression online often comes down to being articulate or insightful, maybe witty in your text.
Right. And conversely, things like poor spelling or bad grammar can create a disproportionately negative impression just because there's less other information to balance it out.
Okay, that flows right into how we share our emotional selves online when, you know, our bodies aren't visible. We lean pretty heavily on things like photos, avatars, specific online slang or speak, and obviously emoticons and emoji.
Yeah.
All to try and convey our intended feeling, make the impression we want.
Photos are super common for self-presentation, usually aiming to show our best self, right? But the sources mentioned some interesting research, Blaskovich and Balinson back in 2011. They suggested people can sometimes make a better overall impression using an avatar than with an actual photo of themselves.
That's counterintuitive, but it makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah.
Because avatars give you total control, right?
Exactly.
Which opens up way more possibilities for how you present yourself. And yeah, maybe for deception too.
For sure.
You can control your appearance, age, location, even gender. In a way you just can't with a photo.
So yeah, instead of those subtle facial expressions or the tone of voice we use in person, online, we often turn to emoticons and emoji. They become these little graphic shortcuts for our emotional state. A smiley face stands in for a smile, a sad face for a frown. It's a visual depiction.
And the sources pointed out other clever ways we try to inject emotion too, using asterisks like brackets around an action, like sigh.
Right, or waves.
Yeah. Or using uppercase letters for intensity. Or repeating punctuation marks, like adding 5 exclamation points instead of just 1.
Oh, we've all seen that.
We've all done that.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's shift gears a bit. Let's talk about 2 surprising factors from the sources that deeply impact online interaction, time and space.
Yes. This is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, this part was really thought-provoking. The sources suggest that online, time itself communicates something. It's almost like a form of relationship currency.
Think about it. Waiting for someone to reply to a message, online silence isn't just empty space. It has message value.
Mm-hmm.
A quick response time often makes you feel closer to someone, right? It signals they're available, they're invested. It's what they call low response latency, a quick turnaround. The sources even noted that frequently rewriting messages before hitting send can signal interest. Especially if the final message is witty or amusing, it shows you're putting actual thought into it.
Okay, this brings us nicely to a couple of theories the sources mentioned about how relationships actually develop online.
Right.
First, there's hypercommunication theory. Henderson and Gilding, 2004.
Hmm.
This suggests that because some cues are missing initially, we might tend to idealize someone we first connect with online, maybe sort of exaggerate their appeal in our minds,
yeah.
Fill in the gaps positively.
Right. It's one perspective. But then you have social information theory, which Walter proposed back in 1995. And this offers a bit of a counterpoint. It argues that, look, given enough time and enough message exchange, online communication can actually be just as effective as face-to-face interaction for developing really meaningful, deep relationships.
How does that work then?
The idea is that the necessary social information is still exchanged, it just happens over time, through the content of the messages themselves, rather than all at once through visual and auditory cues.
So you see this really interesting tension presented in the material, don't you?
Definitely.
There's this potential for idealizing someone early on because cues are missing. But that's contrasted with the very real possibility of building truly deep connections online just by exchanging information over time. So as we wrap up this deep dive, it feels pretty clear that technology is doing way more than just giving us a new way to talk. It's fundamentally reshaping the actual rules of engagement, you could say.
Absolutely.
From computers trying to mimic us and the incredible flexibility of our online personas, to how we basically have to reinvent nonverbal cues and even how we experience time as a communication tool. The digital space transforms interaction in really powerful, sometimes unexpected ways.
And what's truly fascinating, I think, is how the sources highlight both the conscious and the unconscious strategies we all use in this space. You know, choosing an avatar, deciding how to format an email, judging the speed of a reply, all these seemingly small choices, they add up. They contribute to this larger picture of how we present ourselves, how we perceive other people, and ultimately how our relationships are built and maintained online.
It definitely leaves you with a lot to think about. If, like McLuhan said, the medium really is the message, what nonverbal messages are you sending out there? Through the platforms you choose, the cues you prioritize, and maybe more importantly, how do you think those messages are shaping the relationships you're building in this digital world? Something to ponder next time you're about to click send.